Time is now 1:31, and I'll call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. You're in Belch Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the beautiful and sunny city of Juneau, Alaska, Alaska's capital. Members present today on April 3rd, 2023 are Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Bishop will be joining us in just a little while, and Senator Dunbar is here as well, along with myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business today. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome Recording Secretary Juliana Singh, as well as our LIO moderator, Jake Wade. Today, we have two items on our agenda. First up, Senate Bill 94, Profession of Pharmacy, and then Senate Bill 89, Age for Tobacco, Nicotine, E-Cigarettes, Tax E-Cigarettes. First up, Senate Bill 94. Here to present the bill, we have bill sponsor, the Honorable Senator Kathy Geisel, and her staff, Jane Conaway. Senator is joining us at the table now. Senator Geisel, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and begin with your presentation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Kathy Geisel. I have the honor of representing Senate District E, that's in Anchorage. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for hearing Senate Bill 94. The goal of this bill is to protect the public by ensuring the safe practice of pharmacists in Alaska. This bill updates outdated statutes, obsolete statutes, actually. The bill is a multi-year collaboration between multiple organizations, multiple chairs of the Board of Pharmacy working alongside the Alaska Pharmacists Association. In the letters of support, you'll see letters support from students in the pharmacology programs. You'll see some letters from retirees, as well as some folks in the Alaska Tribal Health System. Like the rest of healthcare, the practice of pharmacology or pharmacy has changed significantly over the last 20 years, particularly during the pandemic. Pharmacists filled in critical roles and provided service gaps that existed during that pandemic. This bill covers statute areas such as changing the Board of Pharmacy composition, the administration and prescribing of epinephrine auto-injectors, licensing of out-of-state pharmacies, internet pharmacies, pharmacy wholesalers and distribution centers, the power of the Board of Pharmacy, also requiring a national criminal background check, and it repeals obsolete and unnecessary language from their statutes. There are a list of folks that will be presenting to you who are extremely knowledgeable about the subject, but Mr. Chairman, first, we have a pharmacist who is on a break from the other body. That's Representative Justin Ruffridge. During this short break, he has time to present to the committee. And so, Mr. Chairman, with your approval, I would defer at this time to Representative Ruffridge.
Very well. Thank you for that great introduction of the Honorable Senator Representative, Justin Ruffridge. Representative Ruffridge, if you can join us at the table. State your name and affiliation for the record and begin your remarks.
Yes, thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Justin Ruffridge. I'm the representative for District 7, presenting and welcome to answer any of your questions for Senate Bill 94 as a pharmacist and as the previous chairman of the Board of Pharmacy. This bill and its companion in the House, which I am sponsoring, is the collaboration of multiple chairs of the Board of Pharmacy, the chair before myself, as well as myself, and then the current chair. It was a large project that was undergone at the request of the governor for right touch regulations. Through that process, we were updating and were encouraged to update our pharmacy regulations in order to modernize them, repeal regulations that were out of date, as well as update regulations in regards to federal legislation that had passed in regards to drug supply and security chain. Through that process, which obviously in government takes much longer than you think it's going to take. So this is the end result of multiple years and multiple chairs worth of regulatory work. Through that process, we discovered there were multiple statutes that needed to be updated in order to have the regulatory changes needed to fully implement that right touch regulation. Many of these changes in this bill are as a result of the Drug Chain and Security Act, Supply Chain and Security Act, as well as updating some of the licensing requirements for, especially for licensees for the practice of pharmacy as a pharmacist and pharmacy technician. There are certain paperwork requirements that are required in statute that, frankly, are quite a bit outdated and unnecessary and delay our licensing process. In addition, it allows for some changes to the Board of Pharmacy, some that are, I think, extremely important as a result of struggling to find public members to sit on the board and actually having no pharmacy technician voice on the board. This bill changes the structure of the Board of Pharmacy to include a pharmacy technician in lieu of one of those public members, which the previous structure is to have five pharmacists and two public members. Some of the final changes are to include the prescribing of epinephrine by pharmacists to increase access to epinephrine auto injectors. We call them EpiPens. You may have heard of those. The language in our statute currently is relatively unclear. It seems to indicate that we can dispense and prescribe those to individuals after undergoing training, but this would clarify that and be very, very clear that that program is under the Board of Pharmacy, as well as give the explicit authority to pharmacists to be able to dispense and prescribe those life-saving medications. There's some other ticky-tacky things, we'll call them, in the bill that clean up old statutes, but other than that, this is a multi-year, multi-chair, multi-agency, so in collaboration with the Alaska Pharmacists Association, which their current executive is sitting right behind me, and we'll be happy to answer questions as well, I'm sure. So thank you for indulging my introduction of this, and thank you to Senator Giesel and her staff for putting together this bill, and certainly hope that it earns your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Rutherford.
Thank you.
Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing
All right.
none.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Good luck. Senator Giesel, if you and your staff would like to join us back at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jane Conway, my staff would be happy to give you a sectional now if you desire, or you can go directly on to hearing from Ashley Shaver, the chair of the Board of Pharmacy, whichever your pleasure.
I think we would appreciate a sectional.
Very good. I'll turn it over to Jane Conway.
Sit down or not. Jane Conway, staff to Senator Giesel. I'm happy to do as abbreviated sectional as possible in the essence of time. Senate Bill 94, Section 1, amends the section is the creation and membership of the board and officers. And as Representative Ruffage said, we're doing a little bit of a change out in the board composition by adding a farm tech as one of the positions on the board. Section 2 amends powers and duties of the board, doing various things, such as adding the epinephrine auto-injector training program to be under the board's purview, clarifying that only pharmacists who dispense federally scheduled controlled substances need to register with the PDMP. It adds pharmacies and manufacturers from out of state to the list of entities to be licensed and inspected. It also adds internet-based pharmacies as well. And it allows the board to adopt regulations about pertaining to the retired pharmacist status. Section 3 amends reciprocity and license transfer, removes a very outdated wording of good moral character, something that is not in other statutes anymore. Section 4 amends the licensing of facilities, and it adds the out-of-state pharmacies and manufacturers to the list of entities that must be licensed and inspected now. Section 5 amends licensing and inspection of out-of-state facilities. That adds also the distributor, pharmacy, and manufacturer to those entities that must be licensed and inspected under the Federal Drug Supply Chain and Security Act. Section 6 pertains to licensing and inspection. Section 7 amends fees. It removes the word registration, since now the bill will mandate that these entities must now be licensed. Section 8 amends the administration of vaccine and related emergency statute, allowing the pharmacist to administer epinephrine to a person or prescribe it to someone who has completed their epinephrine auto-injector or EpiPen training program. Section 9 amends the executive administrator of the board section. It adds another additional salary range so that the board could have the option of hiring a pharmacist for the role of their executive administrator and offer a different salary range. Section 10 amends certain advertising that is prohibited. This one adds the term apothecary to the list of those that can't be used in media or advertising unless the store actually employs a licensed pharmacist with regular hours. Section 11 amends the National Criminal History Background Check. It adds pharmacists and pharmacy techs to those that must submit to the National Criminal History Background Check. Section 12 amends prescription purchase administration of epinephrine by a trained individual. Section 13 and 14 are amendments to the training programs. It allows the board rather than the Department of Health to administer the training for the EpiPens. Section 15 amends applicability, and that this bill does not apply to those currently who have under another law authority to administer epinephrine, such as a doctor or a nurse or some other authorized personnel. Section 16 amends the liability of certified individual, outlining that a person in good faith cannot be sued while administering epinephrine in an emergency situation, especially and if he or she, that person that is administering that, has completed the EpiPen training. Section 17 makes some amendments to definitions. Section 18 repeals various things, such as repealing the registration of pharmacies located outside the state, because now they must be licensed, so that language is going away. It also repeals the language of the Department of Health overseeing the epinephrine auto-injector training program, and it also defines that the Department of Health will no longer be the approving entity of the EpiPen training program. Section 19 is transition language so that it would allow pharmacies previously registered to continue to ship, mail, and deliver prescription drugs to their customers until their registration expires. And upon that time, then they would have to apply for new licensure. Transitional language is Section 20, that they may adopt, the DCCED could adopt regulations, and Section 21 allows that to happen immediately. And Section 22 is the overall effective date. And that is set, yes, at it's kind of an accelerated effective date because we're trying to comply with the National Drug Supply Chain and Security Act that goes into effect November 26th of this year. So we hope that we can get this all done by then. Thank you very much, and we're open for questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, we will move next to invited testimony. Joining us via the Teams Hub, we have Ashley Shaver and Brandy Signa-Martin. Welcome. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Brandy Signamartin. I am a licensed pharmacist, and I'm also the executive director for the Alaska Pharmacists Association. I actually live in Eagle River. Senator Mayer is my senator. So I'm here to lend our support from the Alaska Pharmacists Association, and we're so grateful for all of the tremendous work that has been put into this piece of legislation from our entire Board of Pharmacy and the past members who have recently went off the board for various reasons. So you've already heard all of the many wonderful provisions, so I won't get into any of that, but I will help support Dr. Shaver as she goes through her presentation as well by advancing her slides, and I'm available for any questions as well.
Excellent. Thank you for being here. Dr. Shaver, thank you for joining us today. You can begin your presentation whenever you're ready.
All right. Good afternoon. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So for the record, my name is Ashley Shaver. I am the current Board of Pharmacy Chair, and I'm very excited to be here as invited testimony today. So thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the committee. I wanted to let you know that I have been an Alaska resident for over 15 years and practiced as a pharmacist in Anchorage. A lot of what is in my presentation has been covered already, but we can go to the next slide, which is the Alaska Board of Pharmacy Strategic Plan. Senator Geitzel mentioned our mission, which is to promote, preserve, and protect the public health and safety and welfare through effective control and regulation of the practice of pharmacy. Specifically, goal number 4 on our strategic plan, which is to grow the economy while promoting community health and safety. A lot of the changes in Senate Bill 94 were born out of goal number 4, specifically 4.1, routinely reviewing effectiveness of regulations. As Representative Ruffridge mentioned, the Right Touch Regulation Project that the board has taken on over the last several years. 4.5, which is advocating for legislation as the pharmacy profession evolves. That was 4.4. And then 4.5, anticipating changes to the Drug Supply Chain and Security Act and responding proactively. So next slide. I'm on slide number 3, which is background of Senate Bill 94. As already mentioned, multi-year, multi-chair review. We've got this kind of broken into 4 pillars: streamlining the license process while improving public safety, compliance with the Drug Supply Chain and Security Act, and alignment with other professional boards, both with in Alaska, here in Alaska, and pharmacy boards within other states, and then clarification of pharmacist role and epinephrine access. And then just to reiterate, this is a collaborative effort, both the Alaska Board of Pharmacy and the Alaska Pharmacists Association, as Dr. Signamartin mentioned, do support this bill. Next slide, please. So streamlining the license process, it's already been mentioned, we have unnecessary and redundant forms that are required in statute, so this bill removes those. One other change is clarifying that only pharmacists who dispense controlled substances are required to register with the PDMP. Currently, those pharmacists have to fill out an exemption form, which then has to be processed by the division. So this was identified as a way to streamline and make more efficient the application process, and then adding the national criminal background check. The national criminal background check would replace the current state level background check, and that is required in 30 other states. So it puts us in line with the majority of other states and is in line with the Model NABP Act, which is the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy. Next slide. So this slide talks about compliance with the Drug Supply Chain and Security Act, and Representative Ruffridge already talked a little bit about why that's important, with the goal to ensure that what medications reach Alaskans are safe and not counterfeit, and that really is the main goal of the Drug Supply Chain and Security Act. As we've worked through what's needed to happen for that over the last several years, we've determined that boards of pharmacy play a really key role in that process, and that's through the appropriate licensing of drug distributors and pharmacies. So Senate Bill 94 really clarifies exactly what the board's role is and ensures that they have the appropriate authority to license all distributors, manufacturers, out-of-state pharmacies, and internet pharmacies through which Alaskans could receive medication. Next slide, please. The next goal is alignment. So we talked a little bit about replacing one of the two public member seats with a pharmacy technician seat. We've seen our pharmacy technicians play an increasing role in our pharmacies and in our profession over the last several years. Multiple other states have replaced or have added at least one pharmacy technician to their board. So this is in alignment with other boards. Allowing our Board of Pharmacy to adopt language for retired pharmacist status puts our Board of Pharmacy in line with other Alaska professional boards and recognizes pharmacists who have spent their career within the profession of pharmacy here in Alaska. And then the last point here is clarifying the board executive administrator salary. So the goal is to be able to have flexibility to hire a pharmacist as the executive administrator in the future if the need arose. So if there was an applicant who was a pharmacist, the board would have the ability to compensate that individual at a pharmacist salary versus what is currently in statute. And I should also mention that that is in line with about 50% of other states who either require their executive to have a pharmacist license or whose executives do have a pharmacist license. And then the last goal here is epinephrine access, and I feel like we've covered that pretty well here. Just clarification about what's currently in statute, both in the Board of Pharmacy statutes and the Department of Health. Ultimately, this increases epinephrine for Alaskans. And it's very similar to the model that we have in place for naloxone distribution. So I just wanted to add that there. There's a model in place there. And then last slide, just want to respectfully request your support for Senate Bill 94. I appreciate you taking the time today to hear the bill, and it will help us ultimately meet our mission. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Shaver. Are there questions from members of the committee for Dr. Shaver or others? Seeing none, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll take a brief at ease while we prepare for our next bill. We're back on the record, 1:57 p.m. here in Belch Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. Next up in today's hearing, Senate Bill 89. We've held two hearings on this bill. During our last meeting, we held public testimony. Mr. Tim Lampkin, staff to Senate President Gary Stevens, will join us at the table once again today to give a brief recap of the bill. Mr. Lampkin, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Thanks again for continuing to work on this bill. Just in recap, just to remind the committee, this is primarily about getting e-cigarettes and nicotine products out of the hands of our youth. These products are in our schools. I'd like to address some of the testimony that we've heard so far, if I may. Having listened to it again very carefully, some of the points made are worth just bringing up. For example, compliance, there was a couple items mentioned that putting a tax on this and increasing it to H21 will increase the burden on our law enforcement. That's not entirely true. I have data and representatives from the courts and others that indicate that these statutes have been on the books for decades. It has been a tool available to law enforcement, but it's not very often that you see a student that's actually cited for this. You'll hear eventually from districts that that is not increasingly the case, that they're having to write tickets more and more. We have in our state our own investigator classes. Each department can hire their own enforcement arm, such as licensing, tattoo parlors, wage and hour revenue, tax, licensing, food stamp fraud, that sort of thing. So it's not an extra burden on law enforcement in and of itself. You've heard that the tax rate of 25% is punitive, that it's too high. I can show you the receipts that I did buy those products for a dollar. I went and took pictures locally. I have that. I can offer you what these prices are locally. If you go to the internet, likewise, you can find this pricing information. These products are cheap. If you measure it by the puff, it's pennies. So I would dispute that the idea that the 25% is too high. I find it interesting that out-of-state folks are coming to us and telling us that we don't have a problem in our schools, when as I continue to work on this database from school districts, overwhelmingly, when I've asked them the questions, are you seeing it in schools? Overwhelmingly, yes. Do you see it on the rise in our schools? Overwhelmingly, yes. Do you believe that e-cigarettes and vaping products are safe? Overwhelmingly, no. As with alcohol, do you support raising the legal age to buy, sell, possess e-cigarettes to age 21? Overwhelmingly, yes. And finally, do you support establishing a 25% retail sales tax on e-cigarettes as a way to deter youth initiation? Overwhelmingly, yes. Mr. Chairman, this is a problem. We need to deal with it right away, and I invite any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lampkin. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One statement and then a couple of questions, if I might. So, Tim, Mr. Lampkin, I have expressed some concern with the employment provisions, and we are working now with Let's Legal to try to draft an amendment that we'll talk more about and just see if it fits appropriately. My concern with 19 and 20 year olds losing employment opportunities is my primary concern with the bill. I wanted to talk about that 25%, sort of how you came to that number in particular. I know that, in Anchorage, we did try to take some actions to equalize the tax between cigarettes and other tobacco products, even when things are not technically tobacco but contain nicotine. And we raised the prices, I think, in Anchorage pretty substantially on the latter. And I was wondering if you had looked into it all, the impacts that action in Anchorage took. There's this sort of belief from some of our testifiers that it would create a black market, an illicit market. And I think Anchorage just did this thing where we significantly increased the price of this thing. Is there indication that has created a black market in that case? And then my second question is, even with 25% tax, do you have a sense of where it, because in our case, even when we increased taxes pretty substantially on other tobacco products, they were still far below cigarettes. And I'm wondering if that will still be the case with the 25% tax on vape, if it's still, substantially below the price point for cigarettes.
Through Chair, Senator Dunbar, I suppose it depends on who you ask, frankly. 25% in researching a university professor out of the University of Chicago, Illinois, I probably won't pronounce his name correctly, Dr. Chalupka, I think. I have a full report of his. He's considered the leading economist in our nation as regards tobacco products and economics and taxation thereof. And according to my information, he has no problem with the bill's tax rate and finds that it is is at parity with tobacco cigarette products, that we're really close to the mark. And the argument that rate should drive people back to cigarettes is not valid according to that professor.
Okay. And have you had any chance to look at sort of what the changes in Anchorage, what impact they might have had?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that data is, I'm not sure that it's available yet because it's still relatively new, but leading information from the CDC has indicated historically, particularly with tobacco and cigarettes, that taxing that product is the singularly most prominent and effective way to reduce consumption of those products.
Okay. One brief follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I guess the question I'm interested in is, I believe, and I have to go back and look at the exact change that Anchorage made, that you know Anchorage has a very substantial cigarette tax that raises actually more than $10 million a year. I think people don't realize just how much money Anchorage raises off of cigarettes, which also made me think that perhaps the projections for how much was going to be raised from the vaping taxes actually might be low. You might end up raising significantly more for the state. We raised more than we expected from the alcohol tax as well when we put that into effect in Anchorage. But my question is, did the changes Anchorage make actually drive people back to cigarettes or create this sort of black market? And if the data isn't available and isn't anything detailed, then that's fine. But I think it's a question worth kind of exploring a little bit. You know, did these effects these negative effects, did they actually happen in a case where this thing, something very similar to this, just passed? So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So that information would probably be highly anecdotal. I don't know if there's any empirical data that's going to be available. Similarly, as regards the black market, I think that's why it's the black market, because it's hard to get data accordingly. But I can certainly pursue that question.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So talking about the 25% rate, for those out there, no offense to anybody who's complaining about the 25%, if I remember correctly, the bill, when it was presented during the last session, I think it was 50%. And the 25% was a compromise, if I remember correctly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Other questions from members of the committee? I have a question. And Joe Darnell, chief investigator from the Division of Behavioral Health, is online, as well as Sylvan Robb is in the audience. And maybe if one or both of you could speak to this question. Do either of you, Mr. Darnell or Director Robb, do either of you foresee challenges in enforcement as it relates to this bill?
To the chair, Joe Darnell, I'm the Department of Health and Social Services, or Department of Health, sorry. Chief investigator with the underage tobacco enforcement. Chair, I see no added workload for us on this. I don't see that it would really affect how we do business if this bill is going to effect.
Very good. Thank you for that answer. Director Robb, do you have any concerns with enforcement or implementing the sections of this bill?
For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Mr. Chair, we do not. We are currently enforcing the age 21 tobacco law, so we wouldn't see any change related to this bill.
Very good. Thank you. Any final questions or thoughts from members of the committee? Seeing none. At this time, I would like to open and continue with public testimony on Senate Bill 89. As a reminder, if members of the public have testimony that they would like to submit in writing to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, please email us at slac@akleg.gov. Once again, that email address for you to submit written testimony is slac@akleg.gov. We'll open public testimony. Time limit for testimony today is 2 minutes. I will prompt you to wrap up your remarks at 2 minutes. Please do wrap up your remarks very quickly after I prompt you. If you don't wrap up your remarks, we will disconnect from the call to allow others to testify. First up to testify today is Megan Butler. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Megan Bolter. I'm with the Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation.
Please begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm a public health law attorney practicing in the area of tobacco control and related disease for the past 18 years. I work for the Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation, also known as Tobacco 21. We appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony in support of the minimal legal sales age provisions of SB 89. For more than 2 decades, we've worked with multiple state and health advocates to raise the age for all tobacco and nicotine products to 21, including supporting the similar bill last year, which was passed by this legislature and made it to the governor's desk in hopes of keeping addictive and dangerous products from being marketed and sold to be a vulnerable youth. To date, Alaska is one of 11 states or U.S. territories which does not have a state T21 law. This bill is a step to ensure that Alaska differentiates itself in bringing forth a state prescription for restricting youth sales by holding retailers accountable for illegal sales of these products, and not the youth who have been captured by deceptive and predatory sales tactics, many of which have been disclosed in the numerous lawsuits against Juul specifically, which continues to market and sell its products in the state of Alaska and the U.S., contrary to what one opponent claimed in testimony last Friday. I realize I'm running out of time, so I want to take a little bit of time just to refute some of the opponent's complaint. What is undisputed? Nicotine has been linked to scholastic depression. You heard from the school system. Most recently, a study published this past December by researchers indicated that T21 laws sizably reduced 12th grade cigarette use by 35% with supplemental reductions for 8th and 10th graders. But moreover, they were correlated with reductions in e-cigarettes across all grades. In light of that, I implore this committee to request the evidence on which many opponents base their claims. It should be noted that no e-cigarette has ever been approved as a sedation device by the FDA. And in fact, the FDA has had to provide a specific disclaimer on its website based on fraudulent industry claims. And I quote, "There is not yet enough evidence to support claims that e-cigarettes and other ENDS products are effective tools for quitting smoking. In fact, there's a growing body of evidence that e-cigarettes actually make it more difficult for smokers to quit and has the tendency to prolong the process when used as an alternative to other nicotine replacement therapies. Finally, this law is consistent with the federal law. It is consistent with Alaska's Tobacco Enforcement and Youth Education Program. It is also consistent with the military policy given the Department of Defense's declaration prohibiting the sale of tobacco products to anyone under 21 on any DOD installation or facility. And moreover, as was just stated, Alaska's Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, which issues tobacco license endorsements, has already established the minimum age to buy tobacco products to any person under the age of 21. Thank you so much. A license to sell an addictive and harmful product is a privilege. I appreciate the opportunity to provide commentary in support of SB 89.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Bolter. Up next, June Rogers. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is June Rogers. I'm a lifelong resident of Fairbanks, and I'm calling on behalf of myself to voice my support for Senate Bill 89, the e-cigarette tax bill that raises the age of tobacco purchase from 19 to 21. Which will conform with federal law. For several years, I have contacted legislators regarding the massive health issues that our families have encountered due to tobacco use. I am deeply grateful to all the supporters of this bill, and especially grateful to Senator Stevens for his continued diligence on this issue and the issues of vaping. Every brick in the wall brings us closer to a healthy community. I do this in honor of my brother, who passed away much too young from throat cancer. I thank you for your time and your service to Alaska.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Rogers. Up next, Jason Jones.
Hi, this is Jason Jones. I'm an owner of Legion Vapor here in Anchorage on Eagle River, and I just wanted to give it perhaps a unique perspective on what Anchorage did with the tax and what happened as a result of that. This was approximately over a year and a half ago in August when the 55% wholesale tax from the municipality kicked in. And when that happened, there were approximately 10 or more vape shops. I believe that over the year after reduced to me and two other shops. So most of the vape shops went out of business. These are vape-only shops. So we just had vape equipment, no other pipes or bongs or, you know, paraphernalia like that. So also the age 21 amongst the vape shops were being enforced for over 3 years now. So I don't see that as being an issue as far as selling to youth. But I have seen 100% lots of businesses go out, and lots of businesses like gas stations and head shops pick up vapor products. They also sell other things. So having my whole shop taxed at 55% wholesale was an absolute it was definitely a weight to bear. I'm lucky to be standing, but I have three children that are teenagers in high school and middle school. I do not want to see youth vaping or smoking. I enforce the ID, and it's the loss of jobs that I saw, and families that were a small business locally that enforced this and believed in health or harm reduction. They pretty much went away, and it's been substituted by mom and pop shops, things like that. Definitely there has been an increase in black market. I've seen it personally. You can go on a Chinese website right now and get the products for a dollar that I sell or buy mine for you know, $10 to $20. It's absolutely, black market is in Anchorage, and the true vape shops are all but extinct. And adding another 25% on top of this.
Please conclude your remarks.
Yeah, not sure that we can bear it here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. If you could stay on the line, Senator Merrick has a question for you.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. Mr. Jones, thank you for being here. Are you exclusively a retail shop, or do you allow consumption on site?
Well, we are a retail shop, but we can vape in our shops. So we've been grandfathered in for years. We've been in business 8 years.
Great. Thank you very much.
Samples and things like that, we can't allow that. That's part of the rule.
Thank you for your testimony today. Up next, Tabitha Blades. Ms. Blades, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Tabitha Blades, and I'm a high school assistant principal on the Kenai Peninsula. I'd like to thank the committee for taking time to hear public input on this bill and for taking it into consideration when making your decisions. In my role, I have daily contact with over 700 Alaska teenagers. As disciplinarian, it's my job to administer consequences for violation of school district policy, so every vaping incident comes through my office. On average, I spend more than an hour school day every school day investigating, conferencing with students, administering discipline, and contacting parents about vaping incidents specifically. Depending on the day and the contents of the vaping device, the number of hours dedicated to this can go up exponentially, but it rarely, if ever, goes down. The problem has been so intense that we invested thousands of dollars to install Halo vape detectors in all of our student bathrooms and locker rooms, and they provide us with real-time alerts to let us know when students are using vaping devices on campus, both nicotine and THC-based. Disturbing trends that have become commonplace points of discussion throughout investigations are most students who are caught vaping range between the age of 14 and 16 years of age. Over 80% that I speak to report that they've been vaping regularly for more than a year without their parents' knowledge. Students purchasing vape devices are purchasing vape devices sometimes, but regular sales also occur, quote, by the puff just to get through the day. Most students who are vaping, who own vaping devices report using a cartridge a week as their level of use. Many of them aspire to collect different models, some of which connect via Bluetooth to their cell phone apps, which keep a, quote, puff score so they can compete against their friends. This means gamified addiction amongst children. Students who do not vape feel unsafe in school restrooms because they're frequently pressured to participate with or purchase from or cover for students who do vape. Many students who are caught vaping at school report that they're addicted and can't stop even if they try to. Current policy supports an out-of-school suspension as a consequence for vaping on campus, but instead, at my school, students are enrolled in a program here that permits them to come to school while also working through personalized social-emotional education and being introduced to a staff member who heads up our vape cessation support group if they're interested in kicking the habit. This group meets once a week to discuss struggles and celebrate successes and share strategies on how they can try to stay nicotine-free. In my opinion, raising the legal age to 21 would drastically affect the availability to minors, as most high school kids do know a 19-year-old who's willing to help them out, but rarely do I meet a 21-year-old who's still hanging out with high school freshmen. Additionally, imposing a tax would raise the cost, and that would also help to mitigate availability to children who have limited incomes. As of today, I've confiscated several dozen vaping devices, and that's just this semester. And students share with me in conversation that I'm only aware of the tip of an iceberg. As a society of adults who want our children to grow up healthy and free of any type of addiction, we have to put laws into place which can help stem the flow of these devices into the hands of children. I implore you as an Alaskan voter and as a school official and as the mother of a 14-year-old daughter, please approve this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Tabitha. Please stay on the line. Senator Bishop has a question for you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Blades. Do you have a number on what it's costing you to do this added enforcement and these added cessation classes, study halls to help kids kick the habit?
So as far as I can tell you the price tag for the hardware that we've installed, Halo vape detectors are $1,200 a piece. And here at my school, we've installed 10 of them. We're interested in purchasing more. As soon as you put a vape detector in one space, kids find a new place to go. So they do help us. So as far as that goes, but then we also have, our staff member who's running the vape cessation support group as well. And that does cost her time and energy.
So that's, if I could follow up,
yes.
It seems pretty common sense to me. You're spending money out of your BSA that you haven't had an increase in how many years, and it's taken out of the classroom plus the time that you're taking to enforce this. I don't think it's helping kids get a good education. And thank you for your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions from members of the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony, Tabitha. Is there anyone else in the room or online who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 89? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony at this time. I'd like to set an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 89 at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, the 5th of April. Please let my office know if you wish to submit any amendments to this piece of legislation. The committee will meet again on Wednesday, April 5th, when we will take up Senate Bill 83 under bills previously heard. Then we will have a first hearing on Senate Bill 85, Permanent Fund Employment Eligibility, and a second hearing on Senate Bill 45, Direct Healthcare Agreements, Not Insurance. As there is no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:21 p.m.